Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey guys, I am Caleb Giddings.
And I'm Jack.
And Keith is still visiting the ancestral homelands of the bullpup, apparently. So whether you think that's Austria or Israel, you know, whatever, that's up to you. The Og is made in Austria, right? I don't actually...
Yes, it is made in Austria.
I know, you could take my knowledge of the Steyr Og, and if you poured it into a shot glass, you would have room left
for mixins.
Speaking of, though, apparently Keith has returned from his visit to the homelands, so we're just going to add him to this episode live on the air, assuming his Wi-Fi actually works. For long-term listeners, Keith's Wi-Fi is about as reliable as a Keith's Wi-Fi is about as reliable as a Middle Eastern gold dealer who promises you it's 24 karat gold.
For you, my friend.
For you, my friend. My friend. The number of times
I've been called the price.
My friend. All right. So, Keith, we are, since we're adding you to this episode in progress, and people just have to deal with the technical aspect of this. First off, this episode is brought to you by TaurusUSAandGuns.com to learn about the reliable, affordable firearms made by Taurus for personal protection, home defense, and popping locks and skulls. You could go to TaurusUSA.com, and if you'd like to buy one, there's a little button on that website, on that product page for that gun that says Guns.com. You click that button. You go to guns.com, you put in some credit card information, some FFL information, and 2 to 5 business days later, the gun shows up and you pick it up, and then you have your new lock popper, as it were. So anyway, today we are actually addressing one of the reader or listener. I don't know why I still call them readers. These people can't read. That's why they're listening to podcasts.
That's why they're audio format.
Yeah, exactly. No, so one of the things that people wanted us to talk about is the rise and fall of para ordnance that became para USA that became nothing. And it's actually a brand that I have a lot of familiarity with. One of my very first industry events was co-hosted by para USA at the time, Crimson Trace, Blackwater, as in like scary Blackwater. And not the Pirates of Darkwater, which was a thing I used to get confused. Great show, by the way. Underrated banger of a show. So that was one of my very first industry events, was actually hosted by Para. And I had a really good relationship with them right up until they got purchased by the Cerberus Group. So,
bum, bum, bum!
I know.
Turn out well for a lot of people.
That didn't turn
that
out well for
purchasing
anyone.
Thing.
I mean, it is. We are just now in 2023 have Remington as a brand name that is making ammunition again that I would actually willingly put in my guns, and that's because it's all made by Vista. And you know, Remington's firearms production has gone, and you know, we can kind of talk about this a little bit, but so for people who don't know, what the hell was Para USA or Para Ordnance? Well, it was a company that made, for the time, they made double stack 1911s before double stack 1911s were cool, is what they did.
Right.
And like
hipster double stack 1911.
Well, it was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't hipster. It was the mainstream double stack 1911 for a while. Like,
yeah, because it was the only one.
Well, I mean, it wasn't. We should really define here that it was not a 2011.
No, it was not.
A 2011 and a 1911 are very similar, but one big difference, and that's the frame.
Mm-hmm.
The frame on a 2011 is a two-part frame. You have the probably the dust cover unit, and then you have the grip unit. Those come together. Look, I used to see guys that would have like 2 to 3 different grip modules for their 2011, depending on what they were shooting. It's not as done as much anymore, but the para ordnance guns were double stack 1911s using OEM magazines.
Yeah.
And
it's a significant difference, because one of the other things too is you could take a 1911 slide, like a traditional 45 ACP 1911 slide, and it would fit on the para ordnance frame, because that, in our first bit of para ordnance history, is how they got their start. They did not initially make guns. I mean, well, they made firearms in the eyes of the ATF,
right?
But the original,
but not a complete functional firearm that you purchase from a store.
The original para-ord product was a double-stack 45 ACP frame that they would sell to gunsmiths and, that they would sell to agencies. There's a very famous federal law enforcement agency that rescues hostages that had a ton of these frames and built double stack 45 ACP 1911.
Would you say this was a team that rescued hostages?
And that was like, people started being like, whoa, because the original frame would hold 14 rounds of 45 ACP. And when tuned by a professional 1911 ninja gunsmith, would work. And that's the thing, is tuned by a professional 1911 ninja gunsmith. So you have to have, to get these frames, and really to get any 1911 to work at the agency level, you have to have a full-time gunsmith and a bunch of spare parts and a large budget and a bunch of other fun things. So that was kind of the origin story for Para. They started making their own guns. They started making full guns. The first gun was the 1445, which was unsurprisingly a double stack 45 ACP that held 14 rounds. And for a lot of people, they were originally also made in Canada. The frames were made in Canada, imported to North Carolina, which is where they were then sold out to everybody else. Eventually, it was around, So here's a clue on who they were selling a lot of frames and stuff to, because their first U.S. headquarters was set up in Pineville, North Carolina.
Geography, guys, if
you don't know what's around Pineville, Google is your friend. All right. I can't even help you. So they started like going hard into the U.S. market around 2008, 2009, which is when I got into the brand at a media event, first media event I ever went to. No, not the first, one of the first media events I ever went to. And at that time was also when they were really going hard in the paint with their LDA system, which I think I thought the LDA system was stupid. Now, this version of me thinks that the LDA system was ahead of its time. Like, they basically put a lightweight revolver-esque trigger that was a not fully tensioned striker into a double stack 1911 frame. And I'm like, that was actually really, really ahead of its time. And they just didn't realize they were making the gun that a bunch of gun nerds would want in 2023. And obviously, that gun will now never exist. Sad face. So, but Jack, you actually had a Para. So tell us about your experience with Para.
So I had my Para was different.
It was special.
If you guys are familiar, there are the 187th Infantry Regiment of the 104th Airborne, the Rakasans, did a unit pistol from Para 11. From Para Ordnance.
Mm-hmm.
It was a high cap, 45, in tan with black grip, black controls, and all the little bits were black. And it had Rakasans down the side. And I had one of these walk into my life. A guy had deployed, come back, bought the unit handgun, and then years later just decided he wanted. So I ended up picking it up, and for a while had one. I shot it. I was generally happy with the gun. I do remember it not enjoying hollow points. And
yeah.
There was a long era in the late 2000s to early 2010s where there were still handguns that you had to accept wouldn't run JHP.
Right. Which is a crazy thought in 2023, right? Like, oh, my gun just doesn't feed common, reliable defensive ammo. What madness is this?
Well, I'll say that at the time, I've had like this weird full circle movement in my brain. Where at the time I was like, well, it's 45, so I don't really need...
They all thought it was hardball.
Jacket and hollow point. And then later in my life, I was like, well, you really should get defensive ammunition for your defensive firearm. And if you can't use defensive ammunition, you should seek out something that should. This was my Glock phase, when that was just basically all I ran. And now I'm like, should you use defensive ammunition? Yeah. But plenty of dudes aren't getting up from ball. Like, do
it's
your
part. It's better than an empty gun by right. a long, long way.
Do your part and you're going to be okay, but you should try for the best, which is why my 2011 absolutely loves hollow points. It runs like a charm. I have a 2019, which is a different variation from one particular manufacturer. But I do remember the para with ball. I could generally shoot it all day and not have any problems. If I put hollow points in there, I was going to have a hiccup or two. The reason I got rid of the gun, magazines started drying up.
Oh, yes.
And yeah,
that became a problem.
I also got out of 45. I have one 45 left in my life, and that'll probably be the last and only one I have. So I think if I could find a double stack, I think they called them 18.9s is what
the 18.9. Yes, that was a, so I had several 18.9. Oh, I had two different 18.9s, one of which was the TAC 5 or the TAC S, which was the LDA with a magwell and adjustable sights. And I'm like, and I did that gun dirty. I did not show that gun the love that it deserved. I have talked shit about it on the internet, and it was genuinely a pretty good gun.
Yeah, it's in hindsight, I wasn't treating my gun the way I should have been treating my gun. Like, if I had, if I had something else I could do, some other way.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
To go about it, I would have done different things with that para. I wish I'd gotten a para 18.9 where I could have.
Oh, yeah.
Like, knowing what I know now, that gun would run like a sewing machine and probably just the amount of holsters it would fit. Because short of the grip, everything else is 1911, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I wish I'd kept my 18.9, both of them, actually. But let's turn to Keith. Keith, did you have any paras?
Keith never owned a para. As they were rolling out, Keith was a fresh-faced jarhead who was like, AR-10 M16A 4 clone is life.
Right, of course. And you're like, ah, a 1911? What am I going to do with this
1911 thing? Is silly. I did quickly jump into a 45 phase, but it was with the M&P 45, not the 1911 bros.
Not the 1911 bros. Yeah, it's funny, like the whole thing with the para. And so we'll get now a little bit into the downfall of the brand, because I had such uneven experiences with the paras that I had, because I had a para that they called the, instead of calling it a commander, they called it a lieutenant colonel, because those are both O5s, which is silly. But I thought, again, at the time, I was like, you know, this what? Is dumb. Yeah, now that, I'm like, that's
that
funny.
Plays well. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. The light so colonel. I had a 9mm 4-inch like commander size that ran like an absolute Swiss watch. I had a 745 LDA, which is a regular ass single stack 1911, but with the LDA trigger that didn't run. I had a 1640 to shoot USPSA Limited with that worked pretty good. And I had a TAC-S that worked really well if you shot 124 grain plus P NATO ammunition out of it, and only out of two of the magazines that I had, because it was just kind of a finicky. It was a princess. I think that, again, now knowing what I know about that gun, I could have made that gun work well. But and the reason why the story of Para is a sad story is because they were a company that, yeah, sure, they would have QC issues, that sometimes guns wouldn't work out of the box, things like that. But they were never afraid to try something. They were never afraid to try a crazy idea.
There's one other thing I think we should take note of. And that is, they did come up during the assault weapons ban.
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
And they manufactured all their stuff and was made in Canada. And if you wanted high-capacity magazines, they'd sell them to you. Because all of their magazines, all of them, it happened, were built before the ban went into place.
Mm-hmm. Just so happened.
It just so happened to work out that way.
It's like,
what
a coincidence.
I couldn't have told you how likely something like that would be. Probably really unlikely. In fact, the ATF, as I understand it, this is a story I've heard through other people, the ATF also thought it unlikely. And were like, we want to come up and see your shop. And they were like, we're in Canada.
Yeah, come on down, we
eat
guess.
This bag of dicks. Or as our friends in Ontario say, La Boya Bongo Dico. Like,
oh, that was perfect.
We want to come see your facility.
And the ATF kind of had to just take there and fucking take it. They were like, what are we gonna do? They're like, we're in Canada, bro. We can't go there. We're not cops in Canada. We're just maple syrup enjoyers.
No, they were, and it was funny because they were a company that, and they made some really cool products. Like, they had a gun, the 1045 Warthog or something. It was so you guys know what an officer size 1911 is, but make it double stack. And they had an LDA version and an SAO version. And like, you have to remember, if you weren't alive during the assault weapons ban, that, you know, or if you were, but you were too young to own guns, there was such a quote unquote arms race going on to build like the biggest capacity 45s that you could get, right? And because that was the golden age of 45s, because we're like, well, if I'm only going to get 10 rounds, I might as well make them as big as I can. And people made some really wild guns, and Para made some really out of pocket shit that was that I now look back on fondly and be like, Cerberus did those guys dirty, which brings us to the sad part of this episode, because Para as a company was never what you would think of as financially healthy, to put it mildly. And when they're, you know, when the government, which provided them a lot of revenue for the frames, decided that they were just going to get Glocks instead, or they were gonna, if they were gonna do a 1911, it would be single stack. You know, that when that money went away, they pivoted into the civilian market.
Era was a weird one in the Marine Corps.
They pivoted
a lot of guns that don't work. Send them to our gunsmiths to kind of make them work.
I had a MUSOC 1911 that was trash, by the way. That gun was garbage.
Oh, it's not really a MUSOC gun because it wasn't issued to the Marines. It's literally built to the exact same specifications, and it doesn't fucking work.
Except for seven-round magazines.
That's like saying the FN Colt M4 is not a real M4. It's got all the same parts. It doesn't have the auto-trigger group. Okay. All right.
1911s that, from the military side of things, I think actually matter. AMU, CAG, that's it.
Frig, AMU's barely even using 1911s. Now they're using, because of the way, here's a fun side note, because of the way the service pistol rules are written, the AMU can now use any SIG P320 because the actual gun is the serialized trigger part.
Is the fire control unit.
Put them in... hyper-accurized chassis. They could just do whatever the hell they want. So, because I was just at a match with AMU dudes, and they were running their service pistols, and they're like SIG P320 X-Factor, you know, limited edition guns. I'm like, service pistol, my left ball. But anyway,
that serial number exists.
Now we know why they did it. It was strictly for the AMU.
Yeah, of course, because it's like they needed technological help to keep beating everybody's ass. So what happened though was they were acquired by Cerberus, and if you don't know what Cerberus was it was a bunch of scum sucking venture capitalists who had the idea that they were going to bring all of these firearms related brands together under one roof. And then they were going to, you know, apply smart business practices and make unprofitable brands profitable. And there's going to be knowledge sharing and design sharing and resource sharing between everything. And
all sounds like a great idea
on paper. Yeah. And the brands that have survived that are none. In any meaningful way, none of the brands have survived that. And they're all
owned by other companies now.
Due to political fallout after Sandy Hook. Part of that was due to probably not the best financial management from people who are supposed to be the good big brains in the room. And what you saw for a brief period was Para. And you know, talking about the downfall here of Para and focusing specifically on that, was all of a sudden Para, the number of guns Para was making dropped. And then you saw Remington 1911 start to get added to Remington's lineup. And you knew that's where those Para guns were, is they were Remington, they were becoming the Remington 1911s, and they were terrible. And they were terrible because they weren't investing any QC processes that Para had before that just went right out the window in the name of volume. Because those Remington
1911s. That can be said of most of the brands too. Like you saw Remington as a whole take a dive. 700s and 870s, guns that they had made for decades, started shitting the bed.
Right. Remember when that really awful period when you would not recommend a new production 870 to a friend as a home defense gun? You'd be like, can you find a used one? You can?
Yeah. Okay. Did you buy that new?
Yeah. That was a really bad time. But you know, and with Para, for me, it's disappointing because I liked the brand. I knew people who worked there, and it's more disappointing now to me than it was in 2013 or whenever it was that Para officially made its last gun. And it's because, like many things, the youthful version of me didn't appreciate what I had at the time. The fact that there was this brand out there that, again, was willing to do wild shit, throw the spaghetti at the wall, see if it sticks, see if people want to buy these guns. And now I'm like, you know, we did not appreciate Para when we had them. And at least for me, I'm sorry about that. You know, I talked shit about some of the guns, rightfully so in some cases, but it's one of those where it was a brand that was they were willing to actually think outside the box, not like pay lip service to it and then make the, you know, a striker fired 9 mil, but like actually be like, well, what's something that nobody's actually ever done? Oh, put a double action trigger in a 1911. That's us. We're gonna be those guys. Did it work? Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of it for this episode. It's a short one. You guys wanted to know what happened to Para, and we are, for the record, working on a longer episode that goes into like does a deep dive on the whole Cerberus thing, because for us that was something we all experienced. For a lot of the guys that are listening to the show, that's ancient history, which is disrespectful, but it is.
A defining moment in modern gun cultural, especially on the political side of things.
One thing about the brands.
How business gets run now everywhere was influenced by what happened there.
I mean, does AAC still exist?
Yeah, they're owned by PSA.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, by PSA, by Palmetto State.
Palmetto State Armory owns A's.
Right.
Real heroes of the gun industry.
Palmetto State? Yeah.
Palmetto State.
They're the quiet giant. And their ammo is, you know what? Doing all right.
I live in the Palmetto State in South Carolina, and I get their ads during the morning news, and they're basically like, we're Palmetto State Armory. And you know what we do? We make guns for Americans. You like that? Yeah, that's right. I fucking told you. How you like that? And I'm like, okay, Palmetto State. Yes, okay. God,
I think we should go to the Palmetto State Armory and get a tour.
That would be awesome. I went to their media event last year, the gathering that they have, which is not far from me. It was a hoot. Bunch of different manufacturers there, lots of brands, just a great time. So shout out to Palmetto State Armory for being the secret good guys that people don't necessarily realize are the good guys, but they're definitely the good guys. And that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is it for this week's episode. Thank you for liking, sharing, watching, listening, doing all those things that help us grow the channel, grow the channel. Frick. Man, it's been so good this episode. I hadn't had any really bad bubbles. Anyways, we will be back next week with an all-new episode.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.